This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Cameroon's military freed 17 of its citizens held hostage by armed groups from the Central African Republic. One person was killed and four were wounded in a confrontation between the military and the kidnappers. The country says hundreds of its citizens are still in captivity.
That's Smokey Edwin Kinzeka reporting from Cameroon. Details next. Also, Liberians are waiting to find out who will be their next president as officials continue to tally votes from the runoff election. And a new report by the UN Children's Fund finds 2017 has been a particularly brutal year for children caught in conflict. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Cameroon's military freed 17 of its citizens held hostage by armed groups from the Central African Republic. One person was killed and four were wounded in a confrontation between the military and the kidnappers. The country says hundreds of its citizens are still in captivity. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Ngondore, Cameroon.
This ambulance rushes with people said to have been wounded in armed confrontations between Cameroon's military and armed groups from the Central African Republic on the border of the two Central African states. Dr. Yali Bin Yamazani at a Norwegian missionary hospital in the Cameroonian town of Ngaoundéré says all of them suffered bullet wounds.
On nous a amené quatre malades.
He says the four wounded patients are not in danger, even though they have fractured arms and legs. Ahmed Husseini, a 24-year businessman, says they were wounded when the Cameroon military attacked a base of an armed group from the Central African Republic that held him and some of his friends hostage in the bush for 2 months. He says the armed men kidnapped five of them after storming their village and shooting indiscriminately in the air. He says while in the bush, five other villagers were brought and detained with them. A month later, the kidnappers brought another man to make a total of 18 hostages. Husseini says they were given a meal on days when there was something to eat, but went hungry when there was no food. He says they were threatened with death, but never beaten. Kildadi Tageke Buka, governor of the Adamawa region of Cameroon, says the government has taken the necessary security measures to protect the population as they continue additional operations to free dozens of others believed to be still held hostage in the bush. He said by freeing 17 of the 18 hostages, the military has shown it is at the service of Cameroonians wherever they are, and that it will continue to protect citizens and do what is needed to free every hostage. The military says some of the militants escaped to the Central African Republic, and several disguised in Cameroon military uniforms were killed. Armed groups from the Central African Republic have infiltrated Cameroon to seize cattle ranchers and businessmen to extort ransom from their family or steal their property. Before 2014, when sectarian violence escalated between the Muslim and Christian militias, anti-Balaka soldiers from CAR were attacking Cameroon to force the release of Abdoulaye Meskin and 10 other militants arrested in Cameroon in 2013. Cameroon shares a 900-kilometer boundary with the landlocked CAR and presently hosts 350,000 refugees from the neighboring state. The United Nations this month said the security and human rights situation in CAR was starting to deteriorate after a series of major incidents rocked the capital, Bangui. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News. Ngaoundéré, Cameroon.
Liberians are waiting to find out who will be their next president as officials continue to tally votes from the West African nation's runoff election. Former soccer star George Weah and Vice President Joseph Boakai are vying to replace President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. She's stepping down after two terms, the maximum allowed under Liberia's constitution. The National Electoral Commission said on Facebook that the results will likely be announced today. VOA's James Butty is in Monrovia and talked to reporter William Eagle about the wait.
The announcement of the first official results has now been moved to 5:45 local time this evening. This means that the public anxiety has been even more heightened to another high level, because everywhere you turn in this capital city where we are, and I may say around the country, the wait for the results, the announcement from the National Election Commission, is the talk of the town. The people want to know who is leading in the count for the next president of Liberia, or if possible, who is going to be the next president of Liberia.
James, you've been speaking to a lot of Liberians. What are they telling you? What do they expect from their next leader?
I have been this morning, besides speaking to the public, people in the streets, I've also been reading the daily newspapers, and some of them have carried editorials appealing to people or whoever is going to lose the election to pledge their loyalty to whoever will be elected president. Others are talking about the enormous economic challenges that are awaiting the new leader. For example, this country has high unemployment, particularly among the youth. The health system is not up to par, the lack of adequate passable road system, education system. So these are some of the things that the papers and the people are talking about, that whoever is elected, they have to focus on at least addressing some of these things in a very tangible way.
I understand, James, that there was a bit of news from the central bank. What did they have to say about the elections or about the economy?
I think it was about a week ago that the Central Bank of Liberia reported to the general public about maybe about $400 million had been repatriated so far outside of the country. This is an indication maybe perhaps by people currently in high position here who are not sure of what the results are going to be. It brings to mind, Bill, what's happening all around the African continent, where some governments were in power and some money belonging to the people had been repatriated. Of most recent example would be that of Angola, where the new president, Lourenço, had ordered that the people who took the public money must bring it back to the country, or the government is going to claim that that money belongs to the government. So this is probably the same thing that is happening. Perhaps people not too sure what the results will be, is that the results that the public is expecting might turn the other way. So they are trying to exit the country with whatever property or monetary value they have. It's not clear who has that money, who the money belongs to. That will be the task of the new government, to find out whether that money belongs to the public or it belongs to the individuals who might have taken it out of the country.
That was VOA's James Butty in Monrovia. He was speaking with reporter William Eagle. A new report by the UN Children's Fund finds 2017 has been a particularly brutal year for children caught in conflict, as children around the world have been subject to shocking levels of attacks by the warring parties. Lisa Schlein has the story from Geneva.
The UN Children's Fund says there is no safe place for children caught in conflict. The report finds children are being targeted and exposed to attacks and brutal violence in their homes, schools, and playgrounds. This in blatant disregard of international laws established to protect the most vulnerable. The report presents a numbing catalog of abuse and conflicts around the world, in Africa, the Middle East, Asia, and even in Europe, in eastern Ukraine. It reports children are deliberately targeted, used as human shields, killed, maimed, and recruited to fight. Children are raped, forced into marriage, abducted, and enslaved. And UNICEF says the physical and mental impact of this brutality upon children is unbearable and deeply traumatic. This video of Rohingya refugees on a riverbank in Bangladesh, newly arrived after fleeing violence in Myanmar, is heartrending. It shows groups of weeping children and a severely malnourished baby treated by a UNICEF doctor. With the right nutrition, some of these starving children will survive, but many others will not. The report details the direct and indirect price children are paying in several African conflicts. It notes a dramatic increase in violence in Central African Republic has led to children being killed, raped, abducted, and recruited by armed groups. It notes 850,000 children have been driven from their homes in the Kasai region of Democratic Republic of Congo. More than 19,000 children have been recruited as soldiers by armed groups in South Sudan. And in northeast Nigeria and Cameroon, at least 135 children have been used as suicide bombers. UNICEF says children are killed, maimed, denied access to food and water, and pushed to the limits of suffering from malnutrition, disease, and trauma. It says this happens in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, and other conflicts where the rights and needs of children are violated with impunity. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In 2017, Somalia elected a new president as it battled severe drought and resurgent Al-Shabaab. In October, the worst terror attack in the country's history killed more than 500 people. Meanwhile, the U.S. military is ramping up its military operations as the African Union draws down its 10-year-old peacekeeping mission. From Nairobi, Jill Craig has more.
After months of political wrangling and questions of whether a fair election could be conducted amid rampant vote buying, Somalia's parliament elected a new leader in February, Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, better known as Farmajo. Farmajo's win was influenced by Somalia's past 27 years of insecurity, according to former Puntland government minister Ali Ahmed Fatah.
So people were looking for a fresh start, and I think Farmajo was seen as an honest politician, you know, by most people, including the new parliamentarians that came in to town shortly before that election.
Many Somalis want to see changes before the next election, including the introduction of a one-person, one-vote system. In December, the country started registering and accrediting independent political parties for the first time in nearly 50 years. But insecurity remains a serious problem. In October, the worst terrorist bombing in the country's history, blamed on the terrorist group Al-Shabaab, killed more than 500 people at one of Mogadishu's busiest intersections. Meanwhile, U.S. military involvement in Somalia has increased. The U.S. set an airstrike on an Al-Shabaab training camp in November, killed more than 100 militants. The Independent Bureau of Investigative Journalism says the U.S. carried out at least 30 drone strikes this year in the country. But as the U.S. steps up its involvement in the region, the African Union is drawing down its forces. The first batch of 1,000 soldiers are to leave Somalia by the end of the year, though the AU says a total withdrawal will be dictated by conditions on the ground. Somalia says it plans to take over security responsibilities from the AU. A security force of 22,000 is to be created, and Turkey opened a new military base near Mogadishu in September to help train Somali forces. In the midst of these political and security challenges was the drought, which affected millions of Somalis as their animals died and they went hungry. But Fatah warns against giving up hope.
I think we are hopeful, and I think the international community is also hopeful about Somalia. And Somalia, Somalis are indefatigable group, you know. They are not easily discouraged.
not discouraged and hoping that 2018 will bring progress towards stability. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Twenty past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Some Kenyan opposition lawmakers have called on the government to investigate why 90% of the students who took the 2017 secondary education exams failed. The Minister of Education maintains he is satisfied with the results. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Speaking to reporters in Nairobi, opposition legislator Caleb Amisi says Parliament needs to know why students failed.
Kenya National Examination Council, NEC, must be ordered to prepare and present a comprehensive report over this perceived mass failure, and an independent investigation should as well be incorporated. This should be conducted by some of the most credible auditing companies in Kenya.
In 2017, more than 600,000 students sought for secondary education exams. Only 10% scored high enough to enter a university. The results have sparked an uproar among parents, teachers and others concerned about the fate of the students and the quality of Kenya's education system. A key question is what caused the high failure rate. Was it the students, the people who taught them, the curriculum, or a speed-up grading process that saw educators plow through the exams in just 3 weeks? Mark Nyamita, an opposition lawmaker, says the problem needs to be fixed or millions of young Kenyans will be barred from higher education.
If this goes on in this government over the next 5 years, we're going to have a whooping 2.5 million plus people with their future shattered.
Some officials say the mass failure resulted from efforts to reduce cheating. In an interview with Citizen Television, Education Minister Fred Matiang'i hinted that might be true, saying the result reflects the real state of Kenyan education.
I am very satisfied with the results we've had in the last 2 years, 2016 and 2017, because we have lived a lie for such a long time. Time is here for us now to deal with the truth.
Calls are growing for a national conference to resolve the crisis and decide what to do about the students who fail the exams. The issue is expected to be discussed in the National Assembly in February. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
There is an upsurge in the killing of lions by poachers in Africa, further threatening the continued survival of the big cats on the continent. Conservation organizations say criminal networks are shipping lion teeth and claws to the Far East, where they're used as good luck charms. Lion bones are also used in traditional medicines in countries such as China, Thailand, and Vietnam, despite there being no scientific proof of their efficiency in treating illnesses. South Africa is the only country in the world that's legalized the export of the bones of captive bred lions. The state says between 2008 and 2014, it exported the bones of almost 5,000 lions killed mostly by hunters. Environmentalists say this trade is encouraging the poaching of both captive and wild lions across Africa. Darren Taylor reports in the third part of a series on the threats facing some endangered species on the continent.
Recent research by international lion protection groups reveals there are just 20,000 of the big cats left in Africa, a decrease by almost half within the last two decades. The Panthera organization's lion program director, Dr. Paul Funston, helped with the study.
And what they told us is that in Western Central Africa, lions have declined in that 21-year period by about 85%. Surprisingly, in East Africa, which has always been regarded as the sort of home of the lion, with countries like Tanzania claiming to have the largest lion population in Africa, we did find somewhere between a 40 and 50% decline over those 21 years. Rather surprisingly and also encouragingly, in Southern Africa, we have a slight increase in the number of lions over the same time period.
But even this positive development, says the large carnivore biologist, is threatened by the newest and greatest danger to lions, poaching. In areas like the Limpopo Transfrontier Park, shared by Mozambique, South Africa, and Zimbabwe, conservationists are seeing a massive increase in lion killings.
And they estimate that 26% of the population of lions has been killed by poachers within 3 years. 35 lions killed through either poisoning or snaring, and in all cases, the heads and feet were removed.
Funston says in the past, poachers captured lions incidentally, but this has changed since the South African government started exporting more lion bones.
These guys are not targeting lions. They're setting up snare lines, poisoning lines around baits, around carcasses, because they know that this animal is of value. This is a rising threat. We're seeing it in Nyasa, in northern Mozambique, in Limpopo, in Zimbabwe, in Namibia, etc. And I personally lay the responsibility for this upsurge at the South African government's door for creating a market for a product that there wasn't a market for before. I think the South African government have facilitated the generation of a market in Asia for lion derivatives, whatever they might be, bones, teeth, claws, etc.
The state argues that its policy protects wild lions since it trades in the bones of only captive-bred big cats. Funston says this ignores what he calls the fact that such exports are stimulating the illegal trade in lion products and thus poaching.
I haven't heard a positive voice for this, other than the sort of pro folk, the guys who are breeding because they want to make money from lions. But yet the government goes ahead. I actually cannot fathom why they're making that decision.
Funston says this is especially true when one considers that lion skeletons sell for less than $2,000 each. The South African Predator Association represents the breeders of captive lions. Chief Executive Officer Carla van der Pfeiffer disagrees that the legal trade in lion bones is responsible for more lion poaching.
The export of lion bones was legalized more than 20 years ago, so the demand was met from legal hunting of captive-bred lions. The increase in lion poaching is a direct result of the decrease in hunting.
She says less hunting means fewer bones available to the Far Eastern market, which results in poaching to meet the demand. Funston insists there's no evidence for this. In Southern Africa, hunters pay captive lion breeders about $15,000 to shoot one of the big cats. Van der Pfeiffer says this gives lions economic value and thus creates incentives to conserve the animals.
The consumptive use of wildlife has contributed to the protection of species and habitats and an increase in wildlife numbers. In this way, endangered or near-extinct species have been saved through a combination of protection and utilization.
She maintains it's the captive breeding industry that's responsible for the increase in lion numbers in Southern Africa. Funston acknowledges this increase, but still insists that hunting can never be in the interests of conservation.
The breeding of lions in captivity in South Africa is not for any form of rehabilitation of wild populations or for reintroduction of into wild areas. It's purely for nothing else but economic gain of private entrepreneurs, private businessmen.
Conservationists and scientists are appealing to the South African government to reconsider its legalization of the trade in lion bones. If it doesn't, says Funston, poachers could decimate Africa's iconic animal species. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 18:30 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.